Welcome to another That's a Dive. Let's go, Tad Potters. We're back. Kyle Martino in the studio here, and I've got producer Mike with me. PM and I are missing some Champions League today to sit here and chat with you guys. We'll chat at you guys. You're probably enjoying Champions League right now, so don't tell us anything.
Yeah, we don't know the result.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't work because we're taping this. Well, you get the point. Yesterday, we were a little bit disappointed because we watched what was a pretty incredible game. I mean, not together. You sat at home and watched it. I sat
while
and watched
I was at
it.
Work watching it. But
I had my 11-month-old Major on my lap just showing him the beautiful, beautiful game that was Borussia Dortmund, Real Madrid. And there was one aspect that I was explaining to my son Major that he doesn't understand yet that was disappointing me. That was no Christian Pulisic out there.
Yeah. I was very surprised to see that team news come out.
Right? Especially with how good he was against Spurs, even though it was a game they lost, just taking on Serge Aurier, who is an excellent right back, who has a little bit of a red mist, knee-jerk, slide tackle from behind problem that he needs to correct, but is an excellent right back or wing back, whatever you want to call him. I was amazed that Christian Pulisic wasn't out there. And by the way, the camera cut to him at one point. He seemed like he was a bit amazed, too.
Yeah,
he was not happy.
Do you have an explanation for that?
Because
I couldn't come up with one. I tried to explain it to
weird.
Someone. I thought, the squad rotation? I don't know.
They didn't use him last time in Champions League against Real Madrid. That was the game he came on and got an assist.
That's right.
So something about Real Madrid.
Maybe those attacking right and left backs.
I don't get
concerned
it.
About his defense.
They needed him. But, yeah. And he was good when he came on. But obviously they've got a lot of talent that side. So whatever. I'm biased. Let me jump into reviews. I'm just going to read one today because we've got a busy show. And thanks again for all the reviews, you guys. Keep them coming. Review the show, good or bad, but good feels a little bit better. And give your great soccer moment, the soccer moment that changed you as a soccer fan. And I've got one today by Jake T40591. Love the pod and its insights into professional soccer on different fronts. Played soccer my whole life, but can say I was drawn to professional soccer when I went to MLS Cup 2006 between the Revolution and Dynamo. I was lucky enough to land in front row seats. I wonder if they were his or if he just stole people's front row seats. Anyway, by the players, and it was at Pizza Hut Park at the time. So the game went to extra time. The Revolution scored. Everyone thought it was over, and we're all beginning to gather our things. But then right off the kickoff, the Dynamo struck back with Brian Chingy. Well done, Brian Ching. Who ran over and celebrated right in front of me. After PKs, which the Dynamo inevitably won, I literally had a front row view of watching the weariness of defeat on the face of one Clint Dempsey as he walked back to the locker room in what was to be his final game in a Revolution jersey. Needless to say, I was hooked. It's cool, an MLS Cup moment.
Yeah, I remember that game, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Ching
that was a crazy game.
Yeah.
Ching's been a part of a lot of crazy playoff and MLS Cup games.
Well, you know, it's just something. Hoof it up to him. He's going to get up, get his head on that ball.
Was he a part of the San Jose crazy comeback game? Remember, maybe it was Landon Donovan. I remember Manny Lagos, the Dwayne De Rosario. Those are crazy LA Galaxy, San Jose, San Jose Revolution. San Jose Earthquakes game.
I don't remember that one.
It was nuts. I mean, I want to say it was like 5-4. I don't know. I can't remember. I just know that one was one of the craziest. MLS Cup. I mean, I saw the when I was a rookie, you came in, they had the gala. And so I was rookie of the year and you come in for the celebration and you do all the award stuff the night before. And then you go to the game the next day. And that was at Gillette. It was Galaxy New England Revolution. That was the fish. Carlos Ruiz scored in extra time.
Was that when the weather was really bad? Or was that another one?
No, it was nice. Okay. It was nice. The bad weather, I mean, that was like the start, the first MLS Cup. Remember that one?
Yeah,
DC
that
United?
Hilarious.
Yeah, crazy. Was that an Eddie Pope goal? Let's see.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, amazing. Can't believe they played that game, by the way, when you look back at the footage. Anyway, a serious tangent. A little bit of a news item today before we get into the topics. Benjamin Mendy. So we saw him this past weekend take a kind of nasty fall. It was one of those where he was trying to tackle a player and just got his leg caught in an awkward sort of buckling scenario where it hyperextended a little bit and got caught straight, and immediately it looked bad. Immediately he grabbed to his knee. Immediately he did that call the trainers on thing that just worries you, like something bad really just happened. They tested him. They took him off the field. He came back on. It was clear something was up. Something was wrong. He walked under his own power off the field. But then reports came out that initially from Manchester City, they were just going to give him a fitness test before Champions League, which made you think, okay, great. Like, it's not that bad. I mean, you don't have to be a Manchester City fan to not want any player to be injured. And, you know, someone like me who had a career-ending injury, I just hate seeing guys go down, especially when it's serious. So I was psyched. I was like, okay, this guy's okay. He's so important to Manchester City. He's a great player. He's been fun to watch. And then Duncan Castles, and I'm sure some of you out there are familiar with Duncan. Is he the Mirror? I can't remember who he writes for.
He writes PM's for gonna... the Sunday Times.
Yeah, okay. So he came out, and he wasn't the only one. There were a couple of reports that Benjamin Mendy saw the same specialist in Barcelona that treated Ilkay Gundogan with his severe knee injury, and reports were ACL tear 9 months out. So that's out there. And then Benjamin Mendy, who, by the way, if you don't follow him on Twitter, at BenMendy23, he's hilarious. I mean, he calls out, like, his players. He had a funny one about Kyle Walker. I mean, he's classic. He's sort of the young Patrice Evra that, you know, every day there's a hilarious social media, Instagram.
Is that some sort of left-footed joke?
It might be. Yeah. It might be. And then he comes out with this, Benjamin Mendy. Your bio... talking to Duncan Castles, because this was at Duncan Castles. Your bio says journalist. So why you speak like graduate doctor and no one has test to see if ruptured ACL or not? Even I don't know. LOL. So that's a weird one.
It's a weird one. And English is obviously his second language.
Yeah.
So, but we get his point.
Obviously, he's like, hey, Duncan, like, what the hell are you talking about? I haven't even gotten a test, so how the hell do you know? But I hope he's going that strong on him because it might not be ruptured. I mean, that would be great news if it's a bone bruise or it's a partial tear or something where he can get back quicker. But he has grounds to be pissed off if someone's breaking news that he doesn't even know and pointing out the sort of the bad journalistic ethics of doing so. So anyway, keep your eye on that space because hopefully the news is not that bad because I want to see him playing all season long. He's been excellent. All right, the three topics. So take a knee is everywhere right now. And if you've listened to Tad Pods before, you'll know that I venture into the spaces that are on the periphery of sports and sort of infiltrate our game and are a part of our game, but also like the Charlottesville conversation we had. Obviously, Charlottesville is important to me because I went to University of Virginia, so that hit close to home. But every now and then, we'll have some hard discussions. We had an amazing one with Rebecca Lowe about women in sports and the challenges there and what can be done and how awful the treatment of women in sports can be from time to time. And it was triggered by David Moyes and his comments to a female reporter. So go back and listen to that one because Rebecca was fantastic on that. So we're going to dive into Take a Knee and do our best to try and distill it down to what the conversation should be. Next, we're going to talk about strikers and the crazy redemption stories that we see from time to time where these strikers go missing, whether it be with a team or they're shipped off or they're sent to another club because they're not scoring goals and they're no good. And it's not only strikers. This happens with plenty of players in all different positions. But strikers especially, there's these amazing situations like the one we're seeing with Omar Nias right now where they were exiled and then they come back and the person you needed was right there all along. And Omar Nias got two huge goals in Everton's 2-1 win over Burnley on Saturday. So we'll talk him. But first, we're going to get really meta, PM, crazy meta on this show. And I think PJ, our other amazing producer, was telling me that we've done this one time before. We'll have to look back at the archives.
I'm looking through the archives right now so we can get... Oh, I got it.
We have.
Last May, so May 2017... at the top of it, you took a really deep dive on diving.
Yeah, see, there it is. This is the second time we're going there. The show's called That's a Dive, and we're going to talk about diving.
Episode
right
now. Six, first time, but this weekend it was just calling out for it.
Yes. So the situation PM's referencing is different than the typical diving conversation. Typically, we're talking about let's get diving out of the game. These guys flopping around, everyone hates it. And we also hate to go talk to our like baseball, basketball buddies and say and like hear them say, "Oh, I was watching SportsCenter last night and saw someone flopping around," And you hate to be like, yeah, well, I saw like a 7-foot tall basketball player do it the other night too. So let's not act like it's only happening in our sport, buddy. But anyway, we're not talking about that. We're not going there. We're going into honesty, an honest player who was punished for being honest. Jay Rodriguez, this weekend, in a excellent and sort of surprising start from West Brom at the Emirates against Arsenal, just took it to him. Took it to Arsenal. We're pressing them. We're flying forward. They're playing with two strikers. I mean, Tony Pulis showing that old dog's got some new tricks and had an excellent start to the game that should have led to the opening goal. And it was Jay Rodriguez taking a ball in transition over the top, cuts it back on Mustafi, right?
Yes.
Yeah, cuts it back on Mustafi. Mustafi does the sort of typical last-ditch, oh, no, I'm in big trouble defensive move where you get sold with the fake and you leave your trailing leg out there and the player, as he's cutting back to get onto the ball, doesn't have to jump over that trailing leg. But in this situation, Jay Rodriguez wasn't trying to force contact. He legitimately faked Mustafi out of his pants,
yep,
and got caught by the trailing leg, which made him lose his balance. He falls to the ground. And at that point, the referee does not blow the whistle, who was Bobby Madley on the day. The play continues, and he gets up, Jay Rodriguez, and gets a shot off from a very tough angle that Petr Cech makes a remarkable save, and then turns to the referee and says, what gives? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the what gives. Okay, we discussed this on the show, and basically, there's two things. One is that he missed it, right? Bobby Madley missed it, and that's the easiest thing to deal with, because if he didn't see it, and we showed that he was walking across a couple players. So he might have missed it, right? He might have obstructed his view. And he was doing what he's supposed to do as a referee, which is try to improve his angle.
He was running the line properly, but he was blocked. And it was a very quickly developing play. I think it was actually Gareth Barry who was setting the record for all-time appearances who played Jay Rodriguez through. It was on a counterattack.
It was a quick play. He was trying to catch up with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's possible, right? And if that's the case, then it's a moot point. He just missed the call. And that happens. If it's what other people thought, which if he did see it, is obviously more likely. And based on some of his, we were trying to read his lips. I remember you were in the edit room sending us pictures down the line of Madley.
Well, there was a very clear discussion between him and Jay Rodriguez that I was like, anyone good at reading lips? Because I couldn't figure out what he was saying.
And none of us could figure it out. But it kind of seemed like he wasn't saying, you know, no foul, no foul. I mean, that's an easy one, and you don't really need to explain that to anyone. It seemed like an advantage play. Mm-hmm. Right? Which, that's a different discussion. So that's not right. You can't play advantage in the box when it's a penalty call. Because here's the thing, I think it's against the spirit of the game where if they score it, it's a goal. If they don't score it and you call it back to a penalty, they get two clear goal scoring opportunities for the price of one, which is not fair to the defensive team. The other side of it that's interesting is that wasn't an advantage. So a shot from a terrible angle on Petr Cech, who has the angle covered and is an excellent goalkeeper, is not an advantage to getting a shot from the middle of the goal from the penalty spot where you don't have to jump up from the ground and shoot it. So the idea of advantage was brought into the game because the whistle would be blown sometimes and the foul that was called would hurt the attacking team. So the attacking team would prefer to keep playing. That's why it's called advantage. We gain an advantage. We have a better chance of success if you just keep your whistle down and we continue to play on. So in that scenario, they should have blown the whistle right away. But that's not really what we're getting into. What we're getting into is if it was a situation where he was punished because he got right back up, then that's a big problem. Because it's almost like referees have been classically conditioned to be more likely to call a penalty when they hear the scream and see the flailing. And when you think of the sort of psychology of that, you can understand it. Because in a way, the player who was fouled or not, depending on the situation, is kind of bailing the referee out because he's making it a huge situation that has to be addressed. So referees kind of hate that because then they're forced to act. Mm-hmm. But at least they have something to point at. And visually around the stadium, everyone has something to say, well, something happened here. When a player is hit and just gets right back up, it kind of sends a message not only to the referee but the entire stadium. Everything's good. That was no problem. Like, no need to blow the whistle. Everything's fine. what Jay Rodriguez was doing is, listen, I was tripped, but I wasn't hurt. And this is what he said afterwards in his interview. I got right back up and tried to continue to score the goal. But so in essence, he was punished because he didn't sell it. And that's why people dive, is because if you sell it, you get it. And typically when you don't, you're less likely to. And so this situation with Jay Rodriguez, again, making the assumption that Bobby Madley had a good look at it, right? And it is an assumption because we looked at some pictures that maybe he was obstructed slightly. But if he had a good look at that, it just means that Jay Rodriguez hurt himself and hurt his team by jumping up and being honest. And that's just against what we're all striving for. We're all striving for accuracy, first and foremost. That kind of takes it in the VAR angle. But most importantly, integrity. Integrity. So don't hit the ground in a ridiculous fashion. And that doesn't mean don't sell things, right? Because if I trick you, and this maybe is my attacking player bias, if I trick you, right, and if I get you off balance and you stick your leg out or you hit the ground as a goalkeeper, it's not my responsibility to avoid you and do everything I can to make sure you don't make contact with me. That's part of the game. Listen, we see that in basketball all the time. You know, pump fake, like you get the guy off the ground, you jump into him. I mean, that's part of the game. What we hate is when someone makes a decision to hit the ground that is blatantly manipulative.
And that's what we addressed the last time we talked about this, because that was coming off of that weekend where you had Rashford's really bad dive and Sané's really bad dive. And actually, Kane actually had somewhat of a dive.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember those at the end of last year.
Yeah.
Clear
yeah.
dives, exaggerating the play, shouldn't have even been called fouls. This is the other side of that coin.
Yeah.
If Jay goes down like those two went down last season, clear penalty, up 1-0, West Brom, totally different game.
And listen, there's a macro thing going on here, right? Little kids are sitting at home and watching these games, right? They imitate celebrations. They imitate everything players do. I used to watch players play, whether it be in my day, I loved the Argentine. So it was watching Riquelme. It was watching Ariel Ortega. It was watching Diego Maradona. And I would immediately go in my backyard and try to emulate what they did, all the way to the point where I had taped a white piece of tape around my knee because of Verón. I loved when he did that and pulled his socks down. So these kids, they watch, they pick it up. If you're diving and it's being rewarded and it's not being punished, they will adapt to that. Adopt that. They will mimic that. So if you, not only within the league or within the sort of the more micro level of make a statement here. Jay Rodriguez got up, but he's not going to be punished for that. That's a penalty. There was a foul. I'm pointing to the spot anyway. Even if that makes me look bad, even if everyone's all upset because he got right back up, that's a penalty. The message ends up getting out there. I do believe that you will be rewarded for honesty. I mean, you can still try and play the game without that edge that you're seeking of deceiving a referee. I mean, that's part of the game. We accept it, but we're never going to eradicate it completely. But I just think that moment is a perfect moment to send a message, to make a statement, to try to move things towards, listen, you know what? You don't have to flail on the ground. You don't have to scream to get a penalty.
Yeah. Well, you know, what was even maybe more remarkable than anything after this game was that Wenger even said that should have been a penalty.
Which is, I mean, took a double take.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, Arsene Wenger is the king of, well, I didn't get a good look at it. I didn't see it. No, I'm sorry. So the fact that he was willing to admit that goes a long way. And obviously it had major implications because they had a great start. Arsenal came and scored very,
very
soon after that.
Yep.
On an excellent free kick from Alexis, and then Lacazette finished it. So That's on diving. And you know, that game and that player and that moment brings us on to the next conversation, which is striker redemption. Now, with Jay Rodriguez, it's a different kind of story because Jay Rodriguez comes onto the scene at Southampton, scoring goals in the Premier League, just lights out, looks destined to get an opportunity to play with England.
In the World Cup. Yeah.
Has a bad knee injury and then has a enormous amount of time out of the game. I mean, the type of time out of the game where a lot of players don't come back from being out that
long.
Yeah,
and he had that situation where, you know, you can speak more accurate to this, but he has a knee injury, and so he's favoring other parts of his body, and I believe he hurt his ankle.
Overcompensation, and then other things start to, yeah. I mean, that inevitably, that's what ended my career, is I had a really bad, Well, first, ankle injury against Cameroon in the Confederations Cup where I had ligament damage. And that coming back from that. And here's the thing about injuries, and we had an injury episode. It's all rushing you to get back out there, which doesn't fix any of these problems. All it does is sort of pass the buck to the next part of your body that has to pick up the slack for what's still hurt. Mm-hmm. And then everything starts to break down. And eventually my body just kind of gave out on me because it was a series of bad injuries that I couldn't overcome. And Jay Rodriguez, to his credit, amazing. He looks to finally be out of the woods, looks finally to be, knock on wood, back to a version of himself that can perform in the Premier League and can enjoy the game and be productive. Because he had an excellent game against Arsenal. He's had a great start to the season. So that kind of gets you on the redemption front, but in a different way. What we're talking about is players like Omar Nias. So he scores a brace right against Burnley when he comes on in that game. He had scored midweek too, right, in the League Cup, I believe. Anyway, he was purchased by Roberto Martinez, right? If I'm correct. I think he was purchased by Roberto Martinez. And yes. Then Martinez gets fired. Doesn't really get a lot of burn there. Had an injury. And then Koeman comes in and literally snap judgment. This guy's not good enough. Doesn't even give him a locker.
Although Koeman now claims that's untrue.
Oh, come on.
I was just looking at earlier to see like what he had to say. He says,
He's giving us a Mendy tweet?
He did have a locker. There are a lot of stories. ..
Well, okay. Even if he had a locker, he wasn't allowed to sit in it and have his jersey with the first team hanging up there. So
one thing
he could go play.
That was interesting is that in this preseason, he wasn't part of the squad that got fitted for suits for their pregame clothing attire.
Let's see you deny that, Ronald.
Yeah. So he had to get fitted for his suit the other day.
And he can't deny that because the reason we know that, he showed up to the game in a tracksuit when all the other players had their team suits
That's
on,
right.
had their
yeah.
Everton sort of badge team suits. So this guy wasn't even given a suit, right? What did Ronald Koeman see in such a short time period that made him think, nah, this guy's not good enough? No
yeah.
way, no way. And listen, we've seen that in high profile examples like with Jose Mourinho and like Kevin De Bruyne or you know. Things like that. That's different, right? Because I don't think Jose Mourinho is saying this guy's not good enough. He's kind of saying, listen, you don't fit in to what we're doing now. And a lot of times, players of the caliber of Kevin De Bruyne, who was Bundesliga Player of the Year when he left Chelsea, they get pissed. And they're like, okay, well, I don't want to be here. So, you know, a lot of times Jose Mourinho gets stick when he doesn't deserve it. He basically is saying, I don't see it right now. So hang around and wait for your chance. And some of these guys don't want to hang around and wait for the chance.
And he did the same thing with Lukaku, where
yeah.
he shipped Lukaku off. And
he wanted to keep Lukaku, I remember. And Lukaku was like, no,
yeah.
I want to play. I'm
yeah.
out of here. So it's not those situations, although we see this kind of someone else sees something in a player that many don't. You know, Victor Moses is a perfect example of that, who wins a Premier League at wingback. And Conte figured that out in like 30 seconds in preseason that he was going to be integral.
And other managers couldn't figure that out, what to do with him.
Yeah.
He was in so many different places before that. Yeah.
That's a different example because that's repurposing a player, right? That's taking him and putting him in a different position. And that just shows like amazing foresight and ingenuity and creativity to find where he can fit into a side in a way he didn't before. But Omar Nias, you see this with strikers. Listen, they do the hardest thing in the game. The hardest thing in the game of soccer is to score goals, right? And when they're not doing that regularly, a lot of times with certain players, and Nias kind of falls into this category, they don't bring a ton to the side, right? So they're judged very harshly and immediately on their ability to deliver that. Javier Hernandez is a name that comes to mind. Here's one of the best finishers in the world. I honestly believe that. One of the best finishers in the world. But the reason he's not starting regularly for a Real Madrid or Manchester United, the reason he comes to these teams and kind of ends up being pushed to the side or being down the depth chart is because he's not a great soccer player. You know, like the other parts of his game, linking with the team, holding the ball up, you know, taking players on. I mean, you see it right now when West Ham try to use him in a wide position. He's not effective mm-hmm. there. And you can see it. He hates it. And even Bilic knows it. He keeps trying to say, no, he's not playing out wide. We keep bringing him centrally. So you see how it happens when a striker stops scoring goals. Sometimes there aren't other great redeeming qualities. But it was clear that Nias, obviously in a different league, could score goals, right? And it was clear at Hull
when he went on
in
loan.
A short time there
yeah.
that he could score goals in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So now it's clear he can do it for Everton. And it's just remarkable. Listen, I'm not talking about a guy sitting on the bench. I'm talking about a guy that literally wasn't allowed in the building. So, like, that's a huge leap to go from, you know what, Omar Nias isn't good enough to be with our 23s or have a suit. Now he how do you argue him not starting next game? You know what I mean? Like, that's an enormous 180 from Ronald Koeman. So I've seen this in my own career. Ante Razov is a great example. He came to Ante Razov, one of the leading goal scorers all time in Major League Soccer, won an MLS Cup at the tender age of, I think, like 19 or 20 with Chicago Fire.
Great left foot.
Amazing left foot, amazing finisher.
Yeah.
But he came to the Columbus Crew, and he was terrible. He wasn't scoring goals, and he didn't contribute anything outside of scoring goals, really. I mean, and he's actually a decent soccer player. I mean, he's lazy as hell, and I'll tell him that to his face. You know, he to this day is a good buddy of mine, and is great in a pickup game or whatnot, and is a remarkable goal scorer. But when he's not scoring goals, he's not helping you out much in the team, and he wasn't helping the Columbus Crew out. We weren't using it at all. And then we traded him, and I can't remember who. Check that out. This must have been like 2005, 6 or something like that. And he started scoring boatloads of goals. I mean, it was like hilarious. I mean, the second he got there. So, I mean, strikers are just these funny beasts, right? They're these different animals where you have to have patience with them because they're so – like, look at Harry Kane, right, talking about patience. If people were knee-jerky, the guy doesn't score goals in August, right? If you were knee-jerky, you'd say, well, I'm not giving him September. I mean, this guy's on the bench. We're not going to wait around for him to start scoring goals. The guy's the Golden Boot winner the last 2 years. So if you're knee-jerky with strikers sometimes you just fool yourself. Sometimes you miss a diamond in the rough, and I think we're seeing that with Nias. Now, let me not get hyperbolic. I don't think he's ultimately their answer. They still need an out-and-out striker. They still need someone who can be consistent in that role. Wayne Rooney, I think, can still play that role very well. I think he played it really well in his return to Old Trafford. But he doesn't stretch a back line. He doesn't have pace. He can't play every game up there. So you need to rotate someone. I'd love to see Calvert-Lewin get more reps up there, but that's a different conversation for another day. So now Omar Nias back in the fold. He's getting measured for a suit. So, I mean, he's suiting up literally and figuratively. And
do you think it's just as someone who never played at that high level with these forwards, is it not only opportunity but also just getting a run of games, the confidence of a forward?
Totally. It is the most emotional position on the field. I would say together with goalkeeper, it's the most isolating and emotional position on the field. You are, and this is how I describe goalkeepers, and I do it similar for strikers. You're an individual athlete in a team sport because you feel such a great pressure to produce these goals. And when a striker's not scoring, there's a problem. When a midfielder's not scoring, there's not necessarily a problem. And obviously, when a defender's not scoring, no one cares. When a goalkeeper's not making saves, there's a problem. So it becomes this binary thing of you're not doing it, someone else will. You know, in the modern game, it's changed a bit because you can be moved around. You know, there aren't many traditional number nines left. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of it's repurposing a number nine. So it's, you know, Olivier Giroud, why he's not getting a lot of burn is because he is a number nine. He can't really play any other position on the field. But Alexis, Lacazette, Walcott, all these other players, when they're not scoring goals, can just be pushed into a position where that's less of a problem to a manager. But I always find it fascinating when these Omar Nias things come up and everyone kind of freaks out and they're like, oh, this is incredible. And you just think to yourself, no, I mean, he didn't all of a sudden out of the blue become a good finisher. And listen, guys go on streaks. I get it. And sometimes you have a good month. But you know, if you can score goals, you kind of can score goals. And this guy can kind of score goals. So I'm not saying he should start every game. I'm not saying he should, you know, Real Madrid should buy him. I'm just saying the guy should have a suit.
Yeah, he should. And I looked back. Razov was traded to the Metro Stars for the Silver Fox Wonder, John.
Oh, Walniak. Yeah, that's right. Oh, my God. And that sort of moved that story on. Walniak and I became good buddies because we both loved to play the guitar, and that was just an immediate sort of brother connection. And the day I got traded from Columbus to L.A., I had asked for the trade. Mm-hmm. Ziggy Schmidt and I weren't seeing eye to eye, and I was a pain in the ass, so I'm sure he just wanted to get
rid
of me.
That's surprising.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people at work right now are going, yep, got that. I sort of angled for a trade, and I had my house on the market. It was like it was no secret. Everyone knew I was trying to get out of Columbus. And not because I didn't love it there. I loved Columbus. It was our first, I'm 20 years old when I moved there. It was my first real world experience of being there by myself. I loved it. I loved the fans. It was just time to go. And Walniak, I asked him to come over and help me fix something in my house because I was putting it on the market. And while he's up on a ladder, this poor guy like sweating, helping me put up like a fixture or something, I got a phone call from my agent and he said, okay, the trade's gone through. Ned Grabovoy's coming to Columbus. You're going to L.A. And it's also it's a two player deal. They want a John Walniak too, so Walniak's gonna go. And I'm looking up on the ladder. I'm like, oh my god, this guy's gonna be so mad at me because he also loved Columbus and it was going well for him there. And so I totally screwed it up and got him traded to L.A. Which, by the way, then we became roommates in L.A. and had a blast. So everything was good. But I couldn't tell him, so I got off the phone. And I can't break that news to him. I had to wait until his agent called him. And that story actually, to get remarkably tangential, goes on to a dinner once I went back to play Columbus for the first time. Ned Grabovoy, who I loved, who we became good friends, who was an excellent player.
God, I remember him playing at Indiana.
He was so good. He came to University of Virginia on a official visit, but didn't stay because I was already there, and we were very similar players in similar positions. Anyway. I go out to dinner with Chris Winger, and some of the guys and the wives, and his wife comes. Ned invites me over to meet them right when we get there at the beginning. He says, oh, this is my wife. And she's like, and he's like, yeah, this is Kyle Martino. And she goes, yeah, I know who you are. You're the reason we're in Columbus when I'd rather be in L.A. And I was like, oh, sorry about that. So sorry, John Walniak. Sorry, Mrs. Grabovoy. All right. All joking aside, we got to get on to an important topic and a tough topic to talk about. And there is so much noise right now around Take a Knee. And the emotions are just so high that I think the point of why the whole Take a Knee movement really got started has been completely lost. This isn't about protecting patriotism. It's about protecting people. Colin Kaepernick decided over a year ago, at great personal cost, because after that decision, he's been out of the game. And, I don't know enough about football, but people that know a lot about football say it's not because of his talent. I mean, this is a very talented guy who can help a football team. He made a decision to not stand for the national anthem, to bring awareness to the systemic racism in our culture. And what compelled him to do that was a few dozen high-profile examples of police brutality nationwide that led to unarmed black men losing their lives. And in that moment, he felt compelled to act. And I don't want to speak for him. He's very clear on why he decided to sit for the anthem. And you can go back and look at his first interviews after doing so, where he explains it. I took a little blurb from one of his interviews to kind of use his words, because I think it's important that we get back to that. He said, and I quote Kaepernick here, "I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change. When there's significant change, and I feel that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand." That's gotten lost. That's gotten lost why he decided to do this initially. Take a Knee has always been about that. But, I feel like since no one appalled by the jester can or wants to argue that racism doesn't exist, they've created sort of a patriotism straw man to have a solid ground to fight from. Disrespecting people who risk their lives for this country that's an easy argument to win. No one wants to do that. I mean, the brave men and women who put their lives on the line for our freedom are absolute heroes and should be honored and should be admired. But if you go back to the beginning, I mean, that's why Kaepernick changed his protest. I mean, people also forget that fact. Initially, he sat for the anthem. I mean, that was the decision he made. He felt compelled to act because he felt injustice, and he felt he needed to stand up for the voiceless. And that fact got lost in the shuffle that initially when he sat, he had a conversation with a former NFL player, a former Green Beret by the name of Nate Boyer, and asked him, you know, is this offending service people? Is there a better way to do this? And immediately was sensitive about that issue because it's important to be sensitive about that issue. I'm not discounting that is a huge part of this at all. But, you know, it's not to say service people can't still be offended by someone kneeling for the anthem, but it is to say it's impossible to suggest that offending them was the intention. And it's actually quite the opposite. Kaepernick also goes on to say in one of his interviews, you know, he has friends and family who have served. He respects them tremendously. He respects people who fight for this country tremendously. And you know, offending them might be a consequence. And that's important to talk about. That's absolutely an important part about this. But it's impossible to say that's what he's tried to do and that's what he's wanted to do or that's what anyone wants to do when they join, take a knee, or they make the gestures they've been making. You know, I'm sure when Colin had that discussion with Nate Boyer, you know, he heard a lot of things that changed the way he felt about it and that changed the way he wanted to go about it. I mean, that changed him from sitting from the anthem to kneeling, which he thought was a more respectful way to do it. And again, I'm not arguing that doesn't still offend, but take a knee. It's something that he thought, how do I do this? How do I do this in the right way? Because it's important to me. It's important to our country. It's important to the conversation right now. And, you know, I put out a tweet saying that, you know, I feel strongly that of course that wasn't the intention. And I got a lot of response and a lot of amazing response from service people who sort of echoed what I don't know for sure, but I believe happened in that conversation with Nate Boyer, which is maybe it offends him. Maybe it did offend him. But the reason that a lot of the service people fight is to protect the right to do those things, the protect the right to make a gesture and to do what you believe in. And let me just read a couple of messages I got. I got dozens and dozens of messages from service people. Here's one that said, which, by the way, from an airbase in South Korea sent this message. Freedom and personal responsibility, one cannot exist without the other. Stand, salute, or kneel. We are blessed with the freedom to make our own choices, and we are equally blessed with the freedom to think and say as we wish about each other's choices. My choice to stand and salute is meaningless to me if you can't make your choice for yourself. The reasons behind your choice are just as important to you as the reasons behind mine are to me. Let's strive for maturity in our dialogue. Let's endeavor to understand each other's choices. And I just think that one and this next one I'm going to read just are spot on, and I think where the discussion needs to go to. Here's another one from a former service member saying, It's frustrating as a current service member to go and fight in countries that don't believe in equality and human rights, yet the country I'm fighting for, a country which many see as the greatest country in the world and an example for others to emulate, can't seem to get it right either. World peace may be a pipe dream, but it sure would be nice to see everyone within America's borders try their hardest to preserve equality and continue to put human rights at the forefront of our citizens' minds. He goes on to say, thank you for using your position and platform to continue to address major issues that affect every member of our country. And that's why I felt compelled to talk about it on this podcast today, because, you know, initially I was emotional and I wanted to kind of go on a bit of a rant. And I decided that's not helpful, because that's what's going on right now. People are yelling at each other. I mean, no one's listening to one another. And that's the only way we make progress. You know, the other thing that's getting lost as people scream at one another from their echo chambers, and that's absolutely happening on both sides. I mean, people are sort of just surrounding themselves and insulating themselves with people that share their beliefs instead of trying to understand why the other side is upset. One thing getting lost is that you know, these brave men and women that go off and fight for us are fighting to they're fighting to protect the rights given to us in the Constitution. I mean, they're fighting so athletes can take a knee if they choose to. I mean, they're also fighting for you to express your disapproval of that if that's what you choose to do. I mean, both of those things they're equally fighting for. So, I mean, one could make an argument that what could actually be offensive to service people is to deny another American a right that these people have risked their lives to protect. I mean, we have to start being honest with each other and getting to the crux of this issue, because that's not happening right now in the noise. And not only are we losing not only have we lost the meaning of the movement and why it was started by Colin Kaepernick, but it seems we've lost the meaning of the opposition to it now as well. And I'll give you an example of that. The other day, the entire Dallas Cowboys, together with owner Jerry Jones, they all locked arms and took a knee before the anthem. But before the anthem even started, they made a decision to get together and show unity and try to find a more constructive way, try to find a more positive way that wouldn't upset many, to still make the same point that we need unity. We need to focus on issues of inequality. And they were met with boos anyway. I mean, people booed that. And so, that makes you think like the disapproval was never about the flag or the anthem to begin with. And so that's not helpful to the people that have a legitimate concern that taking a knee is disrespectful to servicemen. I mean, that's a legitimate position that needs to be heard, because I think if athletes hear that, kind of going back to that initial conversation with Kaepernick and Nate Boyer, maybe they can figure out another way that can make sure that it doesn't create noise that takes away and distracts from what the point is. And lead to great public discourse on ways to help this movement gain momentum without alienating large parts of the country or offending people who have served so honorably. I mean, I would want to believe, and maybe I'm being naive, I would want to believe that if you distill this down to the crux of the issue, everyone would say we have to strive for more equality. We have to strive towards moving to being more inclusive and more understanding of people that aren't like us, that don't look like us, that don't believe the things we believe. And I'd love to believe that a lot of people that are part of this movement would say, oh, man, I would never want to offend a service member. I would never want to offend anyone who's fought for this country. That wasn't my intention, and I'm sorry if that's happened. But none of that's happening right now. I mean, it's just kind of become about patriotism. And that creates a distraction. I mean, saying take a knee is about patriotism is like saying Rosa Parks was about public transportation. I mean, the only reason I feel like we're debating such a simple idea is because understanding the meaning behind take a knee means confronting the reality that racism is a big problem in this country. And I just think many Americans might be unwilling to accept that reality. And whether they don't want to believe it exists because it makes them uncomfortable or because they know it doesn't, don't want to see it change. I mean, either way, there's just a feeling that no one wants to hear the complaint. No one wants to hear what take a knee is about. And it's kind of nothing new. I mean, the backlash to take a knee, it mirrors disapproval towards other major civil rights movements, you know, throughout history. It marches on Washington in the 60s, you know, against Vietnam or the Civil Rights March. I mean, that was in 1963, where Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King, delivered one of the most remarkable, amazing, defining moments of our country in delivering I Have a Dream and delivering that incredible speech. And both of those at the time were met with great opposition. People were upset by those demonstrations. And, you know, to sort of put a statistic on it and make it factual, there was a Gallup poll in 1966, and 63% of Americans gave Dr. Martin Luther King a negative approval rating. Compare that with only 4% when the poll was taken again in 2011. So it just, what that tells me is that in the moment, the truth is uncomfortable, and it makes people very uncomfortable, and some of them will go to great lengths to avoid that discomfort. But I think we have to invite it. We have to invite the discomfort in these conversations. And when we do, therein lies the answers. You know, great change comes from these moments like it did from those in the 60s and you know, my parents, I learned about it in school. My parents talked to me about what it was like to live throughout those times. And it led to such amazing change that has improved our country in dramatic ways. I mean, we're not where we need to be, but we've moved such a far away. I mean, the 90s with LGBTQ marches. I mean, there's so many good examples of things like this popping up that initially were met with opposition that eventually led to remarkable change. And I just think right now, more than ever in our history, people refuse to see eye to eye. And I put myself in that category as well. I mean, I definitely surround myself with things that make me the sort of the confirmation bias, that make me feel better about my beliefs and make me understand. And it's hard to hear the other side. But we have to be willing to do that. Because when we start to do that, and also let these athletes lead that. I mean, these athletes are trying to help start a discussion that I really believe can help lead us to becoming a better country, a country more commensurate with what the flag represents and what our surface people fight so hard to preserve.
Liberty and justice for all.
So my purpose of having this discussion was not to upset people. I mean, there are definitely people on this podcast, I hope there are, that disagree with me or upset about what they feel it means or it's disrespect to service people. I invite that because that discussion is important. But we have to start having that because, you know, this whole stick to sports thing that keeps coming out, which is just kind of the easiest and most ridiculous logical fallacy to avoid this mature discourse. I mean, I'm not even going to explain how remarkably obtuse it is to reason that an athlete or an entertainer doesn't have the right to use their platform to speak about politics. I mean, if you're a plumber or a barista or at Starbucks or an accountant, yeah, have at it. But, you know, these athletes don't mention any of these things. Or the fact that they make a ton of money, that they're millionaires, like they won a lottery or something. You know what I mean? Instead of the fact that these guys have spent their entire life honing a remarkable gift and a craft that entertains hundreds of millions of people on a weekend. You know, the amount of money they make, their W-2 at the end of the year, why would that have any bearing on their right to speak about something that affects their life in such a personal way? And, you know, the reason I'm talking about it on my podcast, and, you know, I'm really grateful to NBC and the producers I have to make sure that if I was going to discuss this, to do it in a way that's relevant to me, that's relevant to sports. And that's why I think that sports is so important, because especially in this scenario where ultimately this is about racism, and that's what the movement is about. You know, the sports world doesn't insulate these athletes from that. You know, so I mean, it'd be one thing if they could disappear from all the world's problems when they play their sport. And you know, when they got in between the lines, it was a nice reprieve from some of the ugliness in the world. But it absolutely happens in sports. I mean, look at our game. You know, it happens in our football, where racism is a major part of what it is happening in the global game. And there's movements to try and help that. You know, I don't think we've done enough and we could do more. But it's definitely a focus. I mean, I saw it in my days as a player, hearing some of the awful things yelled at some of my black teammates. And I see it now as a commentator when high-profile players fall victim to hateful fans or opponents. I mean, sports is the perfect place to start this discussion because it's one of the only places left where people with diametrically opposed beliefs join together in celebration of a shared love. The sport brings us together. So we have this shared love. It brings us together to sing together, to laugh together, to cry together. So that's the perfect jumping off point to further understand one another's point of view. And, you know, I have a very personal side of this, too, because, you know, sports has changed my life. I mean, I'm a white kid from a privileged, sheltered background. I mean, I had one black kid at my high school, and I had such a inaccurate view of the world, and soccer gave me the gift of being exposed to many different walks of life. It showed me the world, and literally I saw the world. I traveled all over, but it showed me the world and how beautiful it is, how multicultural it is, how different I am and everyone is, but how much we can join together and teach one another and share beautiful things. And you know, just one example of something simple I got out of my soccer career. One of my best friends growing up was a black kid from Mount Vernon with Jamaican parents who I would have never met otherwise. I mean, partly he was my best friend because I absolutely idolized him because he was a better soccer player than me, but mostly because he helped me see the world as it is. He gave me the gift of perspective and opening my mind. And I don't tell you this to qualify my strong feelings of support for equality. I tell you that story because it just goes to show that sports can offer us so much more than entertainment. If we're open to enlightenment, that's where we can get it. We can get it from this amazing game that we all love. So let's hear each other out during this discussion. Let's really just put down our attacks. Let's put down our defense mechanisms. And let's hear how people feel about this. Because both sides have something important to say, but only if we're listening. And only when we're listening do we come out of something like this that's been hard for many people. A better country, a better person individually. So that's why I wanted to talk about it today. And, you know, I invite people to use my Twitter feed at Kyle Martino to continue the discussion. But I just wanted to make sure that I said what I felt in my heart and you know, used my platform to try and bring this to a more constructive place. Try and bring this conversation to an area where we can start hearing each other. So I normally sign off every podcast with a what seems like a sort of inappropriate double entendre now of stay on your feet. So let me just sign off today by saying thank you to the Tad Potters that have listened to this, especially the ones that don't agree with me, and reach out to me, reach out to others that are on the other side to help them understand your position. And let's all just move forward by standing up for one another.